Good afternoon, and thanks so much for joining us. Welcome to Lunch with Leaders. I'm Cindy Morgan, the Vice President of Organizational Development and Learning, and I'm really happy that you're here. I hope in this hour you can shut down your Outlook, turn off your MS Teams, and really be present with us here in community as leaders across Penn Medicine. So I love Lunch with Leaders. I love hearing from you in the chat. Please, all back episodes can be found on the Lead Strong webpage, so I hope you'll tell your friends. Past weekend, history was made here at Penn Medicine. I gotta give a huge congratulations to Penn Medicine and in particular HUP and all of the corporate services support to open the pavilion. I'm absolutely thrilled that history was made. I don't know about you, I love seeing the pictures and social media and the drone aerial coverage. What a fanfare, deservedly so. The hard work that this team has put in for so many years to make this day a reality, it couldn't be more exciting. So I want to congratulate everyone who was a part of the big opening. And I can't wait to hear our patients, the families, and how their experiences, as well as those faculty and staff who will be working there. I can't wait to hear everything about it. How was your Halloween? We also had that this weekend. I only wish we could post pictures in the chat because I'd love to see what you or your families dressed up as. Maybe even you dressed up your pets. My mom had a pet costume for her little puppy. It was very cute. I'd love to hear what you or your family members went as in the chat so I could live vicariously through your Halloween experience. So let's turn to the mailbag. If you missed last week's show or last show, you missed a good one. It was all about empowering the Penn Medicine experience. And we had really good feedback from the show. First, we had Dr. Krista Shiashati, Craig Loundis, and Tracy Comack, and they were excellent. Participants really said they loved hearing the personal stories from each of them. Even some people were wondering if Krista could be their personal doctor. I felt that. Those personal stories really did resonate. I also heard through some texts and some emails afterwards that people appreciated that alternative definition of being empowered. The process of becoming strong and more confident, especially in controlling one's life and claiming one's rights. Empowerment is a long, messy process, and that really kind of helped to shift people away from just that cliched buzzword that we heard so many times. So many of you, you wanted to see our very own PMA actor, Craig Loundis. Here he is sitting next to Nev Campbell, who's in the middle on House of Cards. One of his little known facts is he was an extra on that show, and he wound up right there in the spotlight, as only our own Craig Loundis could. The things you learn on Lunch with Leaders, that's why we gotta have you keep tuning in. If you missed it, Lead Strong webpage, just with all the other back issues. So we got a lot of commercials. Youngin, take it away.
Hi, Cindy.
Hi, Youngin.
Great to see everyone here. So our senior leaders are committed to making Penn Medicine a great place to work, and we need your help. We need your feedback. So I'm so excited for Project Vital Advantage. It's underway. It's a system-wide effort to strengthen our culture. So many of you have provided feedback. Please keep them coming. The other is the Diversity Engagement Survey, supported by the Office of Inclusion, Diversity and Equity as part of ACT. Thank you to all those who've shared your feedback. There's still time, so we want to hear from all of you. Now, next slide, the flu shot. Lots of options at your entities and local pharmacies. So please get your flu shot by November 19th. And we're so excited for our December 1st book club. It's really timely topic on diversity. You wouldn't want to miss it. You need to do two things, register to the event and order your book, and make sure you do that by November 19th as well. The CMEs, make sure you have an active profile in the CME system linked with your name, credentials, and your cell number. Text today's code 731-74 to 215-398-6728. You can text right now for next 24 hours. The event handout is on the Leadstrong website. For questions, contact the CME office. And thank you and enjoy today's show.
Youngin, I always appreciate you. Thanks for those commercials. They're really important, so I hope everyone will take action if you haven't already. All right, let's talk about today's show because it's going to be good. So while the pandemic has brought a lot of uncertainty, there's been a silver lining also. We've all grown. We've changed, all of us. And what's interesting is we've all grown and changed in different ways. Some of us may not even know how we've grown and changed yet, while others are really in tune with who we're becoming now. What I do know is a lot of people are taking a step back and looking at their priorities and their values, and for some, that maybe even includes their relationship to work. There's a good chance you're thinking about it. There's a good chance your faculty and staff are thinking about it too. So here's what I do know. We as leaders, we need to do what we can to be encouraging these conversations with our team members. We probably also need to be talking with our own supervisors too, so we're not caught off guard with how people have grown or how they have adjusted perhaps their wants and needs when it comes to their careers. So this is the reality of the situation that we find ourselves in, as uncomfortable as it can be to change, to say it out loud. What's great about Penn Medicine is our size, among many other great things about it. But because of our size, it affords us a lot of opportunities for growth. We can help our direct reports and ourselves architect really long, productive, growthful careers right here within our walls of Penn Medicine. Here's a staggering statistic. Over 40% of all openings across Penn Medicine are filled with internal candidates. So this is happening. It's a norm. I want to give a huge shout out to our partners in recruitment across the system, led by Lisa Babikian, Rhonda Zaleski, and Michelle Delator. She's out in LG. If you don't know her name, she's awesome. And they really work with their teams and our HR professionals to really help people architect great careers here. So there are partners. Many of them are here today in the chat, taking part in this conversation. And I just need to shout them out for helping make this a great place to continue to build and grow our career. So this is our moment. We need to retool to make sure we're having these conversations. And that's the whole purpose of today's show. You see the objectives. I love hearing from you. Please share your thoughts, your feedback, your experiences in the chat. If you have questions for our guests, I'm going to try to bring into as many as possible into the conversation. So before we jump in, let me hear from you. Pull out your phones. I'd love you to text Penn Medicine 918 to 22333. And I want to know, what's your word of the day? How are you feeling? What emotion are you feeling today? And while you're inputting your word, let me introduce you to our guests. It's my great pleasure and honor to introduce Regina Cunningham, Dr. Regina Cunningham, PhD, RN. She's our CEO of Hospital for the University of Pennsylvania. We have Greta Gilbode, the Associate Executive Director, Service Line Operations at Penn Presbyterian Medical Center. And we have Dr. Sharon Hull, and she's a professional certified coach, and she's the president and chief coaching officer of Meta Solutions. I'd invite you to come on screen and on camera and join me. And I'm so happy that you're here today. Thank you so much. Regina, congratulations to you and everything Team Hup, Team Pavilion. I'm thrilled for you.
Thanks, Cindy.
All right, let's take a look to see how our audience is feeling. Sharon, I hope that you can hear us. I know we had some technical difficulties. If you can just give me a hello so I know that you're here and I could maybe stop panicking for a minute.
Hi there. I'm here. Can you hear me?
Perfectly. Welcome. All right. Tired. I feel that. I love that someone got the Penn Medicine 918 in there. I don't think that's how you're feeling, but I'll take it anyway. Motivated, encouraged, overwhelmed, hopeful, excited, busy, caffeinated. Right on. Accomplished, good. Staffed. Ooh, that's good. Regina, these words surprise you?
No, they don't. They don't actually. No.
All right. Well, thank you. We got in the chat, we got content and inspired. Thanks, Michelle. All right. Thank you for sharing your words. I know tired, stressed, and energized kind of all go together in an energetic package. So I feel that very much. So let's jump in. Greta, let me start with you. In a pithy way, can you tell me a little bit about your career journey? And did you always know that this is, you want to be in this role that you have now? Were you intentional about this path? I love your story. Can you tell the audience about your career?
Thanks, Cindy. And I just want to say I'm so thrilled and honored to be here on this panel. It's such an amazing panel and really excited. And hopefully we can turn some of that tiredness into excitement after this discussion. But I always like to say that I grew up at Penn Medicine, meaning I started before I was married, before I had kids, started on a very
corporate side of the organization, and then moved my way over to the operations side through the Penn Medicine Fellowship Program, and have really had the opportunity to work at three of our hospitals within the system, Chester County, Hub, and now Presbyterian. And I think when I started on the operations side, I had always thought that senior team within the health system would be a great place to work, and now I'm here. And so, but to your point in the beginning, Cindy, you know, the ability to create a career within Penn Medicine, I'll be here 15 years from next year. Really, I'm a perfect case example of that.
Thanks, Greta, and we're lucky to have you. Regina, what an awesome career you've built here as well. Would love to hear your pithy story.
Sure. First, Cindy, thank you. Thanks. And thanks, Greta, for your story. I started my career in the clinical world, worked there for many years, sort of came up through the ranks of nursing, and then moved into most of my background's in cancer. Then I moved into sort of cancer administration. I came to Penn Medicine about 11 years ago. It was not something I expected to do at all. And then I have made multiple transitions since I have been here, for sure. I mean, the points that are being made about the opportunities here, I think are really, really incredible. And, you know, careers kind of move by opportunity, a little bit like science. And so opportunities come up and you decide whether you're going to take them or not. So I've been in a number of roles in both nursing leadership here and now hospital leadership, which have been incredible. And again, I would just highlight the opportunities. I think, you know, sometimes people ask me if I could have done something different in my career, what would it have been? And I say I would have come to Penn earlier because it's that good. So I do think that it is a great place to develop yourself professionally and to have a lot of different career opportunities. So thanks.
Thanks. Regina, like when you were a little girl or even when you started as a nurse, did you think CEO of an academic medical center?
No, never. Not at all. It wasn't on my radar at all. I mean, you know, I think I loved what I was doing in nursing leadership here at Penn Medicine and in other roles before that. So it was a pretty significant pivot. So going through that decision was a little bit challenging. It's something I really had to think hard about.
Thanks. I want to try something in the chat. I'd like to invite you to answer in a pithy way a little bit about your own career journey, especially those who have had several roles here at Penn Medicine. I'd love to see some of your career paths in the chat. So I'd love to do that. In the meantime, I'd love to ask Dr. Hull. Darren, I'm so glad you're here, and what an amazing career that you've architected as well. When you were in med school, did you ever think that you'd be coaching people on navigating their careers and you'd have a whole second encore career following your medicine career? Tell us a little bit about your journey.
Delighted to share with you. Thank you. And to be part of a panel with Regina and Greta and all of you is just a real honor. To answer your question, I could never have predicted what I'm doing today. On the day that my family says I strutted across the stage when I got my medical school diploma, and I was not thinking about this kind of career. I'm a family physician who practiced clinically for 30 years. I've been a department chair, a division chief, and I had the privilege of creating the internal executive coaching program for Duke University School of Medicine faculty and leading that program for 4.5 years. I retired from that career in November last year and have devoted myself full-time to coaching since then. So what a pleasure to be here with exciting and enthusiastic people.
Thanks, Sharon. I was so impressed when we had a chance to meet. I'd love to have you tell us a little bit about some of the guidelines, or if someone wants to take action on their career change, when they may not know exactly what they want to do, can you walk us through your model that you've developed?
I'd be happy to do that. And I'm assuming that you're going to put
the
up slide.
The slide is up. Yep, exactly.
Okay. So I'm not a fan of reading slides to you. I'll try to just speak from this slide. My signature question for people who are addressing career change is, what matters to you? What matters the most to you and to your stakeholders and to your organization? If you know the answer to those questions, you can then say, is there any misalignment between those three things? If there is a misalignment, the next question is, what do you want or need to do about it? And what are you able to do about it? And if there aren't misalignments, the question is, how do you grow and thrive where you are? Those questions can lead you to a career decision, which then you repeat as needed. Probably the most important thing I share with people is that this career planning is not a 3-year or 5-year plan that you put on the shelf. It's a living, breathing, dynamic thing that you come back to whenever opportunities or challenges present themselves. And I think it was Regina who spoke about taking the opportunities as they come. When those opportunities or a challenge comes, having a model, having a just what I call the hip pocket questions, is a good way to just work your way through any career question you come up with.
That's great.
I wonder if we might put up that.
Yeah, let's go to the next slide, Jesse. So talk to me about some of these questions that we can be asking ourselves to kind of gauge where we're at relative to some of these things.
Sure. Probably the most important one is to ask yourself, what matters most to me at this season of my life, personally and professionally? The answer to that question changes depending on whether we're in a caregiving role, whether somebody's offered us our dream job, whether our company's downsizing, whether we're in a pandemic. So the question is, today, at this season, what matters the most? And I typically will ask people to make a top 10 list. Frequently, people come back to me and say, I was really surprised that the first 5 things on that list had nothing to do with my career. I'm not unhappy in my career. The most important things to me are other things. So that's an eye-opening question. I encourage people to ask their stakeholders what matters most to them and invite them to do the same exercise. Stakeholders are typically our spouse or children. Kind of joke with people that it's the group of people that if I decided my next career move was to go join Médecins Sans Frontières and work in a third world country, who would be impacted by that decision? Those are my stakeholders. I invite them to participate in that conversation. And I even coach people, if they have children who are of an age who can participate at all, to invite them to tell you what matters to them. The third question is really, what matters in your organization? Is this a time of growth and expansion? Is it a time of real budget crisis because of the pandemic economic forces? What's going on the ground? And what are their priorities? Then you ask yourself, like I said, is there any misalignment between what matters to you, to your stakeholders, to your organizations? And if there are misalignments, what are you ready and able to do about them? There should be a question on here. If there's no misalignment, how am I going to grow? I'm going to stop talking and turn it back to you and just hope we have a good conversation about that.
Yeah, thanks for sharing your wisdom. First, I'd love to just call out that the careers and your journeys in the chat are inspirational. I've got to read Stephanie's. I came from broadcasting, public relations, worked at QVC, was diagnosed with cancer at 26, overcame it. Moved to Children's Hospital to change my focus in life. Worked in the arts for 10 years, came to Penn 6 years ago as the practice manager of Valley Forge Cancer Center, my dream job, and I feel I have come full circle. Stephanie, right on, I love it. There's so many good ones here, so thank you so much for sharing. People have been here 39 years, 20 years, 26 years. It's incredible to see people's rich careers here at Penn Medicine. So I'd love to ask the audience, do these questions that Sharon put up, do they resonate for you? Are there other questions which have helped guide you when you were making career decisions? So I'd love to hear your thoughts in the chat. Freda, let me start with you. When did you know it was time? So you've had a couple of internal moves. When did you know it was time for you to think about what was next? What were some of those telltale signs for you?
I mean, I think awareness is really important, and knowing, to Sharon's point, what you value. And I'm a big learner. I love to learn things. I love to be around groups of people and work in dynamic groups. And for me, each time I made a move, it was because I felt like the current role I was in, I had made my contribution. I had learned, you know, a lot about the job and was ready for sort of the next challenge. And I can't say that I always knew what the next step was, but I think one thing that is really important as you build a career is this informational interview, right? So be curious about the jobs that people have in the organization. Go talk to people about their roles and how they got there or what they do, so that you can have a better sense of, you know, what opportunities are out there. Because I think, you know, especially as the health system has grown, when I started, we were a 3-hospital, mainly downtown organization without service lines, right? So the fact that now I'm sitting at Presby as a service line operations executive, like those opportunities didn't exist. So over time, the health system evolves and the jobs evolve, and we don't know what we don't know. So going out and talking to people about, you know, what's out there, I think is such a important part to that career journey that at least I went through in sort of getting to this point in my career.
Thanks, Greta. That was so well said. Regina, I've got to ask you, so many people are so loyal to their leaders, their teams, their organizations, especially here because we're so relationship oriented. So sometimes thinking about what's best for their career could trigger a lot of feelings like, oh, I'm being selfish, or I feel a little guilty, or maybe I'm betraying my manager, or maybe I'm a little nervous about putting myself out there because I could fail. That emotional side of navigating careers can sometimes make people stay in place maybe a little too long, even when contemplating an internal move. Is that normal? Did you ever feel that? How have you coached others in that situation?
Yeah, I do think that that's normal. I think sometimes, you know, all of those emotions can come into play as you're thinking through a potential career move. I mean, I think, you know, have I ever coached anybody with regard to that? Absolutely. I mean, I think those are normal feelings as people begin to think about a transition. I think they need to be thoughtful and careful in their approach. Sharon, I absolutely love the way that you outlined those questions that we should be asking ourselves. I think people need to be in tune to the voice in their heads. I mean, sometimes we don't always listen to that voice in our heads. And I think, you know, making sure that we understand what is happening there in our minds about these things. I think those are some of the important things. I mean, I think the feelings are normal. People have to work through them as they're thinking through these decisions.
Thanks, Regina. Sharon, may I ask you to comment, as you're coaching people who are considering career changes, have you experienced these types of feelings from people, and how have you coached them? Is it normal?
So it's absolutely normal. And it's the reason that I have people start with, what are my priorities? What are the priorities of others in the milieu? And then helping them understand that their career decision is a balancing of those multiple priorities. And how you know when your priorities take precedence over somebody else's is a dance. It's a negotiation between you and your spouse. It's a set of decisions about what's the impact on my team, my kids who are finishing high school. There's no perfect answer. We make the best decisions about our careers that we can in the moment and try to do them with grace and mitigate the impact on others.
Thank you. A lot of positive comments in the chat about your questions. They really resonate for people. They really like involving stakeholders. Thanks for that comment. Joan asks a good question. Is age a factor as stakeholders for young professionals would be yourself? Are people of different ages navigating their careers differently, Sharon? Let me ask you from an expert seat.
I think, yes, they are. the single postmillennial with no children yet may feel a better sense of freedom to really explore opportunities around the world than somebody who has two or three young children and perhaps is primary caregiver for an aging parent. So it's the reason I say what matters in this season, because the seasons change. And I think if people can take that into account, they give themselves a little bit of latitude. Good question.
Yeah, I appreciate your response there. So a lot of times thinking about change really can trigger feelings of vulnerability. So I'd like to ask you for a moment of true confession. Have you ever gone for a position and not gotten it? How'd it feel? How'd you move through those feelings? Greta, Regina, I don't know, you've architected amazing careers. Maybe this has never happened to you, like it's definitely happened to me. So I'm happy to speak on it, but has this ever happened to you?
No, this has definitely happened to me. I can talk about a time when I was a young nurse, when I applied for a leadership position at Memorial Sloan Kettering. And to be very honest, I was not ready for it, but I didn't even realize how unprepared I was. You know, I think one of the things that I did afterward was to, you know, think about how would I do that better next time? How would I prepare myself better? What should I have done differently as I approach that decision and that opportunity? And, you know, I think one thing that I didn't take advantage of was the opportunity to talk to people about my interests in that role, get some feedback from other people about where I might be in terms of my readiness to take something like that on, where I might need to shore up on some of my skills and knowledge. And so, you know, I think that those are really important steps. So I learned from that experience, you really should tap into resources and be talking to people like we're having this conversation today. You should be talking to people, you know, who can help you to think through some of the complexities of these kinds of decisions and things. And so, so even though I didn't get that role, I think I really learned a lot from that situation.
Thanks. Greta, has this ever happened to you? Did you have the feels afterwards or how was it for you?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, no one likes to be rejected, right? Like no one wants to feel not good enough. But to Regina's point, like she may not remember this, maybe she does, but like when she was restructuring her HUP senior team, I went to her and said, look, I'm interested in being on a senior team. And I was like, what about this job? And she said, quite frankly, you're not ready for it. And that was really honest, wonderful feedback, because then I was like, okay, she's right. Like, and what do I need to do then to get that experience that I can eventually someday in the future do that? So I think those conversations are really important. I can also say that I've also gotten a job that I've been like, oh crap, I got the job, right? And now I actually have to do the job, right? And so, I think that embracing that, you know, I'm a big Peloton person, and so I'm stealing their language, but the being comfortable in the uncomfortable, right? Like embracing that feeling of fear, right? I it was when I got this job and I said, oh my gosh, I got this job. Now I have to do the job. I'm not sure I can do the job. And I called a bunch of friends and they were like, I'd be scared if you weren't scared, right? Like, because it's a big step and a big role, but I think acknowledging that and just being honest and being humble and being open to learning and developing, you know, and being honest when you don't know something and just putting your all into it and being okay with being scared of things. Because if you're not scared at times, I don't think you're going to grow, you know?
Yeah, thanks, great. Greta. I want to just qualify that feedback, Greta. I do think that context matters. Right. So, I mean, and this is important as you're thinking about opportunities. So the opportunity might be right in a particular context, but not right in another context. And so as I think about it, you know, HUP is a certain type of context in the system. Chester County is a different type. Presby is a different type. And so you might be able to do things in one of those contexts versus the other at a certain time. And that could be like a growing experience. And then you could move on. So I wanted to say that. And then I also want to respond to the point that you made about being uncomfortable. And I think that that's a huge issue. When you make a transition, you know, like, for example, when I went from the chief nurse of the system role to the CEO role, I was quite anxious about it, I'll be perfectly honest, because there were certain things I was not used to doing and didn't know about, and I felt like I might not have the competencies to do it. So I would say that, you know, identifying what those things are and identifying ways for you to sort of shore up or get support on those things are things that are available. I would say that people were very, very willing to help me with things, particularly in the first year. I felt like people were incredibly supportive of, you know, helping with areas that I didn't have the same level of experience with. And I think that that's also important, that you can, you know, as you're saying, be humble, be open, and ask for help. And those are things you have to know what you don't know and where you need to get some support, and be able to reach out for it. And I can remember the first year asking somebody who will probably remember if she happens to be listening to help me with some of the financial details, because I felt like that was an area where I didn't have tremendous strength. And, you know, it's a huge budget. And she said to me, "I cannot believe you are humble enough to come to me with that question. And yes, I will tutor you on this. And yes, I am very honored to help you." So that's an example of, you know, really just sort of identifying what you really don't feel very confident about and working on a solution to try to build your knowledge there.
Cindy, I wonder if I could jump in for a moment.
Sharon, may I ask a question from the audience, and then I want to have you comment. Regina, in those moments, Kay Nichols Wolf asked, how did you find the mentors? How did you know who to go to ask for help?
Yeah, so in my because I was at HUP before, I knew the environment at HUP and who knew, kind of like who knew what and who could really help me with what. So that was relatively easy. I mean, if you're coming in from the outside, I think it would be more challenging. But I think I knew the environment. I knew a lot of the people. And if I didn't know exactly who could help, I could ask my boss, who I also have a very, you know, I think very good relationship with. And I know he would have provided the right guidance and direction for me. And so on who to ask about what. So those are some sources.
Yeah, Phil's pretty good like that. Sharon, I apologize for jumping in on top of you. I apologize. I'd love to hear your comments.
No apologies needed. I jumped in on you all. I was just going to go back to something I think, I can't remember if it was Regina or Greta brought up. This is a place where that habit of doing informational interviews throughout your career can generate a pool of mentors and a pool of people of goodwill who will help you when you get there. So they help you with context. Am I ready for this role? I didn't get this role. What do I need to shore up? They can also help you with, oh my gosh, I got the job. And who should I talk to? And even if you come in from the outside, if you've got this network of people you've been doing informational interviews about these kinds of jobs with for years, you can tap what becomes a national network while you build your internal network.
Great. Thanks, Sharon.
Then it's our responsibility as leaders to pay that forward, right? So I would not have been successful in this job if it weren't for the person who had my job before, who really taught me how to do it, right? Because now I'm reporting to the CEO. She doesn't have time to teach me how to do my job, right? And so now, you know, I feel that sense of responsibility that if and when I were to ever move on, or for my team, to help them be successful in their role and really continue that cycle, because that's how we become stronger as an organization, right? When we develop the talent underneath us to step into the roles when we step into something else, that's what the beauty of being part of an organization that promotes with from within and has these long-standing relationships is all about, right? And that's what we need to commit to as leaders as well.
Greta, you're bringing up an amazing segue that I want to make, and yet I really want to go one more point on us, and I want to turn it back to Sharon. Jesse, could you bring up the slide? So often we want people to move around, but we really love it when people stay in their roles. In a lot of expert positions, we expect that people are going to stay and deepen instead of go to more of a breadth career. And sometimes we have people who are blocked. And so their current role, there's not a lot of movement possible. So Sharon, what advice do you have for people who are looking to stay in the role and have a meaningful career?
Thank you for the question. I think that you forgot the slide up about the four E's.
Yeah, we do. Yep.
Okay. So this is the way I help people. If they find that either there's no misalignment and they want to stay and grow, or there is misalignment, but there's not a way to move out of the current situation, I ask them to evaluate their situation for its the degree to which it provides them one or more of the four E's. Education is, are you learning something new, a skill that can translate when an opportunity does come up? Exposure, the ability for people to see you doing something. Experience is the ability to use that knowledge you already have, but to do something with it. And the fourth of these is enthusiasm. Does what you're doing provide you passion? If your current situation is providing you one or two of these, or if you're really lucky, all four, probably worth staying and deepening or looking for the one that's missing. Maybe you're not learning something new, but you want to be seen using your skills. Ask for a stretch assignment. Maybe you know kind of what you've been able to learn about this. People see you doing it, you have experience, and you love it. Stay there because you love it so much. I will make one comment about enthusiasm, and it comes from a quote that Adam Grant, some of you may know, he's at Penn, he's at the Wharton School, and he said something yesterday that I read about burnout. He said, burnout is not a deficit of will or enthusiasm or of stamina. It's a deficit of capacity. And we forget that enthusiasm can be unlimited. If we're bright, overachieving people, we can be enthusiastic about a lot of things. Time is finite. So just looking for more things to fill that enthusiasm bucket, if you don't have the time, can lead to burnout. But in general, the four E's, if you're not getting any of those in your current situation, that's a signal to think about maybe going someplace you can get some of them. Excuse me.
Thanks, Sharon. I'd love to hear from people in the chat. Why do you stay here at Penn Medicine in your role? How have you kept growing? How have you really accelerated your four E's? And while you're giving me your responses to that, I want to go now back to where Greta was going, because boy, I really resonated, Greta, when you said it's up to us to pay it forward, to be building our teams, to build our successors. So I want to come to you and Regina and say, we know people are thinking about the great reshuffling. How do we hold this paradoxical tension as leaders, supporting our team members to grow and try on new options while we really want them to stay here in their roles at Penn Medicine? Regina, how are you doing this? Are you having career conversations? I mean, you've been sort of buried in Pavilion. thoughts on this?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think I would just say that, Sharon, the model that you just presented, I think is really right on, because in an organization like Penn Medicine, we really do want people to stay in, I would say, in certain roles in particular. Like in clinical roles, you really want to keep that knowledge at the bedside. And so thinking about our career conversations with people, helping them to, you know, look at what they're doing and analyze whether it's the right time for a change or not is important. But I love how you have those four E's, and we can think about as we, you know, encourage people to stay at the bedside. I mean, we want people to do that as much as possible. You know, if it's not right for people, though, I think we do have to explore with them what other opportunities might be, what could tap into their skill set, what other opportunities might be available. I think, Cindy, the way I look at it is, there is a tension. One of the things that makes it a little bit less tense is that the opportunities that we have where we started this conversation, we have a lot of opportunities in the health system, so they might want to leave their current position. But if they stay at least at Penn Medicine, I think that, you know, if we look at that broad broad base for opportunities, you know, I think that that's something that we should focus on as we have those conversations, like what else is available in the system, and help people to sort of understand that broader context.
Thanks. I love some of these questions in the chat or the comments in the chat. Carla says, I've learned to be more explicit with my interests, which led to some great stretch assignments. My experience allows me to realize what a great organization this is. Thanks, Carla. A lot of people like the resources, the great leadership, the various projects. It keeps things growing. So I appreciate that very much. Greta, I'd ask you the same question. Thoughts on this? How are you having career conversations with team members? Are you doing it more now? How are you figuring out how people may have changed or grown and what they want now?
I mean, I think one of the things that our teams are using now more than ever is stay interviews, right? Like what is keeping, so instead of the exit interview, why are people leading? You know, why are people staying? And I think it's really important as leaders and managers to at least once a year, when you do the annual performance review, to say, what are you thinking about? Like, how are you feeling in your current role? What do you want to do next? What interests you? How can I help support you? Could I be doing something different as a manager or leader? And I think, you know, one of the things that I would love to see us do more at Penn Medicine is a little bit challenging at times is to give people the opportunity to try something without the consequence of, like, you know, if it doesn't work out or they don't think it's a good fit, like sort of going back to their role or rethinking what they do. Because I think, you know, some people will say, I really want to be in management role. And then they get into management. Oh, boy, no, maybe that's not for me, you know. And so I think giving people those opportunities, I would say that the way I got to where I am now is for volunteering for things that are outside of my scope and volunteering for things that may not seem sexy or interesting, right? But it's an opportunity to work on a project with a particular person or on a particular thing that might be important, where you get that exposure or you get that enthusiasm of or education of learning something new or different. I mean, I'm sitting here today probably because I volunteered back when I was in marketing for the Penn's Way campaign. That's how I met the fellows. That's how I met Gary Scheib, and that's how I probably got the fellowship and how my career has developed. As you know, some people might say, well, that's not really an interesting project, but because I volunteered and I got involved in that space and met some people, I'm pretty sure that's part of the reason why I'm sitting here today. So I think that volunteering and other managers being open to giving away a little bit of someone's time to work on a project is a way that we can give people opportunities across the system in new things and help people with those four E's.
Thanks. The four E's, Sharon, are a huge hit. We're going to post the four E's slide on the Lead Strong webpage, so you're going to be able to access that. I got to give a huge shout out to our Penn Medicine fellows, many of whom I saw in the chat, Brandon, Ethan, Felicia. You're doing a great job. Penn's Way campaign, it's not too late. This is the time to really be generous with our communities, our service organizations that we're interested in, and thanks for raising that. Regina, earlier you said it was tough to go from where you were to where you are now. Some of those skills you were learning on the fly, you had some good mentors there. I coach a lot of people who want to reinvent themselves, but they're not really sure they have the skills or the education or the experience. How have you helped these people rebuild? What are some of those concrete steps you recommend?
I think periodically, you know, many people do reimagine themselves, and it's a good exercise. I think you have to think about what it will be, what it will look like when you get into a new and a different role. You have to understand that there will be a period, potentially period, of greater vulnerability as you make a transition. And so you have to sort of think through that process and what that will be like and how you will get through that. So what kind of support you might need, again, asking for help, identifying people who can help you as you make that transition so that you can be successful. But I think, you know, periodically people come to a point in their career where they decide that they want to make a transition. As Greta said before, I think, you know, again, wanting to continually learn and continually grow in your career, that's a really positive thing. But, you know, it does create some vulnerability, because as you develop those new skills, you don't have the same level of confidence or ability, you know, that you might have had in previous roles. So I think you have to focus on how you are going to do that and what, you know, what supports you're going to get. So identifying specifically who might be able to help you in those particular arenas, and then also ensuring that you get feedback from people, which is critical. So how are you doing on this? What could you have done better? You know, how would you do it differently next time? And sort of be in that continual, sort of continual learning cycle.
Thanks. Greta, have you been coaching employees who are thinking about kind of different types of careers, and what steps have you recommended to them?
So I always recommend like a self-assessment, right? A self-awareness, right? Because I think it's, you know, sort of what Sharon was saying, what's important to you, but also like, what are your strengths and what gets you energized, right? Because I find that people are most successful in roles where their skills and talents match the role. And so if you don't have a sense of where your strengths are or what your interests are, it's kind of hard to give someone career advice. So I always recommend sort of starting there. One of the books that I used to use a lot in mentoring, especially because I do a lot of mentoring at Villanova, my alma mater, with young, you know, people coming up in their career. And one of the books I like to use was Designing Your Life. Now they have one called Designing Your Work Life, but it goes through this sort of mind mapping exercise. And I actually did it myself once in my career. And it makes you look at different career scenarios and mind mapping and figuring out what potential avenues you might take. Because I think sometimes people get this sense that careers are very ladder and linear, and that, you know, there's a ladder that there's a step that you follow, and it's not really like that. When you see most people, their careers are a lateral move here, a move over there, you know, and it's a compilation of experiences versus a linear move. So I really recommend to people, what do you love? What are you good at? And how can we find roles that will match those two together?
Thanks. So well said. That's a great book. I want to recommend it. I'm going to tell you a very funny aside, and I know we have pressing time constraints, but I'm going to say in sixth grade, I took a personality assessment and they said what professions they would come back. And my parents got the results, both high school teachers. And it showed farmer in my top five. And like, none of us really understood why this would be in my top five. But I have to be honest with you, like, it really makes a lot of sense to me. I love growing things, people, businesses, plants, like growing things that like gets me excited. So I have to just chuckle around some of that. Darren, is it ever too late to think about something new? Let's face it, baby boomers, they're aging. And another hard reality is, while I don't want any of our long tenured employees to be thinking about retiring, people are thinking about retiring. Can they have encore careers? And you've done this so well. Best advice for people thinking of reinventing themselves as they think about what's next?
So my short answer to your question is that it's never too late. The best story I have about an encore career comes from a gentleman whose footsteps I followed in, take my first chair's job. And he was an attorney who was highly involved in community theater. When he was getting ready to retire, I was getting ready to step in. I asked him what he was going to do. And he said, I have a secret goal. I want my Screen Actors Guild card. And I want a part in a Hollywood movie. And within a year, he had landed a bit part in Legally Blonde 2. It's an example of an encore career none of us knew was on his radar, but he'd been very intentional about it for a long time. So the key for me is, what do you want to be intentional about? How do you want to spend your time? I tell people that senior stage of your career kind of moves from senior, wise leader, elder in your area of expertise to something I call the capstone. Capstone can be retirement and go fly fishing for the rest of your life. It can be retire and spend time with your family. It can be retire and get your Screen Actors Guild card, create a whole new career. I chose to call mine my encore career because it starts conversations and it lets people know that the possibility is there. So it's never too late.
Love it. And maybe we'll see Craig Lowndes in more House of Cards or other shows. And maybe some of you will be seeing in the movies as well. I really appreciated this conversation. If I could pivot quickly, Regina, in like 1 minute or less, biggest thing you've learned this year as a leader throughout COVID and the opening of the pavilion?
Oh my God. wow. There's been so many things that I've learned. I think, I think the past year, one of the most important things I think that has been reinforced over the past year is that the way you work in the really tough times is really kind of telling in who you are as a leader. I mean, I think that the past year has tested us, past 18 months have tested us in so many ways. And I think it really, I think it's been sort of a crucible of leadership in many respects, the way we've responded as an organization.
Great answer. Greta, same question. What have you learned?
I've learned to just be as authentic as possible and be as honest as possible about what we can't change and what we can change and how we're feeling, and really just to be whatever I could be for my team in order for them to feel like we could get through it together, and to really celebrate small wins despite how small they might be, or how and recognize the challenges and recognize how people are feeling. And I think, people really appreciate when the leader says, I don't know, but we're gonna try this and we're gonna get through it together. and that's the best we can do right now. And I think that we had to do a lot of that. It was very humbling. And we had to lean on each other more than ever. And I personally appreciate all the work that our teams have done across the system, because it's the people on the front lines. It's our people who are tirelessly here day in and day out who made all of this happen. And I just consider it such a privilege to be in a leadership position in this organization.
Oh gosh, I really feel similarly. Sharon, what a time to have your encore career begin. One learning that you've had over the past 18 months?
I think it is that every human I know is struggling with some version of the I can't control my environment question. It takes different forms for all of us. And the learning for me has been about making space for a lot of grace for each other to go through that.
Thanks. All right, with 1 minute left in our conversation, Greta, is there a hidden talent or maybe something maybe many people don't know about you that you want to share?
Well, I was the captain of the rowing team at Villanova, and I've actually rowed twice in the Royal Henley Regatta in England, which was probably one of the highlights of my rowing career in college. And saw the queen as she was waving on the side of
Outstanding. I just am thinking of Rob Lowe in Oxford Blues. I wondered if he was there, but I digress. Regina, same question. Something maybe people don't know about you, or a hidden talent?
Not a hidden talent, but I'm an amazing grandmother.
Well, of that I had no idea. Tell me about your grandchildren.
Oh my God, I have a grandson who's going to be 3, who is just an incredible source of joy. And talk about all the stress and strain during the past 18 months. He's been really a centering force for me. So
that's wonderful. Sharon, how about you?
I love to garden. And my goal was to create a perennial garden where something blooms every month. And my nod to creating hope before last year's election was to plant 500 daffodils and tulips in my front yard. And I knew that I wasn't going to make them come up, but no matter what I did, spring was coming. So
Oh, I really like that. I'd like to see a picture of that too. Well, Regina, Absolutely. Greta, Darren, thank you so much for sharing your great tips and insights. We have so many resources for you on this topic. So both in helping you think through your own career as well as supporting those people on your team. G's going to post the stay interview, the reset interview she already has. We also have the Dreams Career Realize Leadership Pathway. Also, I've got to give a huge shout out again to HR and the recruitment teams, because you've got to be looking at this career website so you can evaluate any internal openings that might be a great next step for you or some of your own staff when the time is right. So our HR business partners are available to talk through careers. They're great at career planning. Our recruiters are outstanding at getting to know people with ambition who are thinking about what's next. They make dream careers come true every single day, and they're a vital part of the process. So I shout them out. I encourage you to be in touch with them. Again, thank you to our panelists. Your careers are enviable and remarkable. I cannot wait to see what the two of you do next. And Sharon, same with you. And same goes for you in the audience. I'm really, count me in terms of your fans, and PMA is here with HR in your corner to help you. So you're not going to want to miss our next show. November 18th, I've heard from so many of you that this is on your mind. Leading to improve community health, we have three powerful panelists: Dr. Rich Wender, our chair of family medicine and community health; Dr. Carmen Guerra, and she works as the vice chair of diversity inclusion in the Department of Medicine, as well as the associate director of diversity and outreach for the Abramson Cancer Center; and Alice Yoder, who's the executive director of community health at LG. You're not going to want to miss that. Again, pull out your Outlook, mark the following, because we got three big shows left in 2021, December 2nd. Did you ever look at slides and just say, how the heck did they do that? You're not going to want to miss Visual Display Gurus, and they're going to really give you their secrets to success. The 16th will be our big holiday episode. It will be epic, I promise. Then January 13th, we'll kick off our 2022 season of Lunch with Leaders. We're going to plan a really great show. Mark your calendar. You won't want to miss it. I love your feedback. I love it when you text and call me and send me emails. I also love it when you respond to the survey. So the survey will be in the chat. If you haven't seen an episode, don't forget, Lead Strong, the four E's will be up there, as well as the hip pocket questions, as well as all the back episodes. So we want to thank everyone who contributes to Lunch with Leaders. Bun Me today from IT, who really helped us with some challenges. Jesse Thomas from PMA, who's our slide guru today. Youngin, G, Jen, Ray, all of the team, Debbie, everyone. I'm just so grateful. So again, thanks for everything that you continue to do to lead during this challenging time. We're just stronger when we're here in community together. Thanks for making such a difference. And thanks for tuning in today. I'll see you in 2 weeks.